Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back here with Anthony McCarthy, my co-host on Mondays. We're doing air traffic control signals first to make sure people know which mic to sit behind. Anthony?
How are you, Mark?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing well. Doing very well.
We are joined in studio today by Trey Lewis, who is president of the Baltimore City Young Republicans.
Yes, sir.
And good to see you, Trey, as always.
You as well. You as well.
And the Reverend Heber Brown, who is pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore over on Belvedere Avenue. Right by Cafe Zen.
That's right.
If you get tired of preaching, you can always get some Chinese.
Some good Chinese.
That's right. Thanks, Mark, for having me.
Good to see you, Heber, as always. The number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. And we're going to talk about state and local politics and also national politics. I'm curious from all of you out there what you think about the O'Malley-Ehrlich election, and if the election were held today, who would you vote for and why? What do you think the stakes are? Are there any stakes for either man winning or losing in this race? What would it take for either man to lose in your calculations and analysis? So we'd love to hear your thoughts on the Ehrlich O'Malley. Who would you race for? Would you vote for O'Malley or Ehrlich or somebody else? Or would you just not vote, as many people did not in this last Baltimore City election?
And a great deal of questions being raised, Mark, about the advertising that has begun for both Ehrlich and O'Malley. Ehrlich airing his first negative attack ad against O'Malley late last week. Very colorful. Martin O'Malley, of course, the O'Malley campaign for weeks now have been going after the former governor's record on taxes and fees and other issues. So it's getting very, very hot.
And and gentlemen, we also want to talk about what's going on in the country here. The Republicans are kind of all of a sudden in the polls seem to be – things are switching for some reason. Democrats seem to be picking up steam. What does that mean? And whether or not what this kind of election coming up is going to mean. Reminding you all also that on November 2nd, we'll have live coverage from Busboys and Poets on Free Speech TV. Anthony McCarthy joining Tom Hartman and me there on the air live. And the next day, Anthony and I will be here for 2 hours of election coverage live here on WEAA on the next Wednesday. And hopefully some of the people in the room here will also be some of the people on our panel then. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Gentlemen, tell me what you see in O'Malley-Ehrlich. What is going on here? Heber? Talk about the community, especially the African-American community, what's going on in terms of the excitement or lack of excitement for this race coming up.
Yeah, I don't sense tremendous excitement just from where I am. I don't sense excitement about this. And in fact, even from some of the things that the discussion points, even some of the ads, as Anthony mentioned, other things that are being pushed throughout the community now, it almost seems like they just dusted off the old stuff off the shelf and just put it out again. And with that, I just don't see. And of course, with the climate of people who are just struggling in ways that they did not struggle maybe 4 years ago than during this first.
Economically, you mean?
Economically, talking about. I just don't sense a real excitement amongst those in the African-American community about this election. But I think, you know, of course there should be excitement, but I think for a different reason than what's normally spoken of in terms of, you know, we want to get out the vote. I think it can be some great excitement if the black community understands that we really are the deciding voters in the state of Maryland. The Baltimore Sun, in an article a couple weeks ago, said that 117,000 votes was a deciding factor that sent Martin O'Malley to the state house. Those votes came from Baltimore City and Prince George's County. And when I was at the faith-based summit this past Saturday, O'Malley.
What was that? What is that?
It was the endorsement party, the AFSCME endorsement party for Martin O'Malley. They had the rally first, and then right afterward, they had a faith-based summit with the pastors and everything. And at the summit, it was very clear that the O'Malley campaign is very scared right now. I mean, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown just said it right out. He said, if Baltimoreans don't show up to vote, then we don't win. And the spirit of his words was very clear that they're very nervous because, as Anthony spoke about the primary elections, historic lows as it relates to turnout, people are, I think, just seeing past some of the charade that's going on and really beginning to wrestle with questions of how this is going to help my household, my community. I'm just not going to vote just to go vote, to say I did it and get the sticker. How is it going to impact my daily life?
Trey, Yeah, from the Republican side, how are you seeing this?
Right. Well, obviously, I'm for former Governor Bob Ehrlich. But the thing is that what's important for people to see, you have to go into details. It's going to be very – with the step on the forefront with the 4 years of O'Malley administration, jobs have left the state of Maryland. We have been in economic problems. We have been, as state employees and local employees, we have been furloughed and we have been given pink slips. But for a good portion of workers, that's not their situation. So in going into detail, you would have to really know the political makeup of each candidate in order to be really motivated and say, this is the way I want the state of Maryland to be moving forward. Unfortunately, a lot of us aren't that political savvy sometimes. So there is not going to be an excitement because there's not a broad brush appeal for all people to be part of. It's a very detailed race. It's a very particular race. It's a very, well, if you did this, this wouldn't happen, and back and forth that both candidates, even though I'm a Bob Ehrlich guy, both candidates can definitely use against each other. So if you don't have that political playbook behind you when you go to the voting booth, you really will be left out. And some people will just say, you know what, I'm just going to stay home.
Well, I think I would ask you, Trey, we find ourselves not just here in Maryland. Maryland's actually doing much better than some states are. But the sure. perception for folks here in the city of Baltimore, so when I was in Prince George's County for a couple of days, just talking to the new elected class there and some of the – there is a horrific perception that people are struggling. But people are struggling across the country.
They are.
So I'm curious at how not only – Bob Ehrlich, but how Martin O'Malley is going to run a positive campaign talking about their accomplishments. It's clear that Bob Ehrlich's going to run a campaign going after Martin O'Malley's record in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. But how are they going to be able to define moving forward, as Martin O'Malley and Anthony Brown keep saying,
right.
or this bleak, scary, dark Maryland that is described in all of Bob Ehrlich's commercials.
This is true.
How are they going to convince cynical, tired, frustrated voters? Yeah, things are going forward here in the state of Maryland, or even worse, Bob Ehrlich saying we're about to fall off the cliff. How are they going to generate excitement and get people to show up? I see it as a huge, almost Herculean task for them.
Right. It is going to be hard because, like you were saying, this dark picture of the state of Maryland that is portrayed by the Ehrlich campaign and O'Malley saying moving forward, don't go back to days that we were running. People don't really understand it. I think what Bob Ehrlich has to focus on is progressive measures, meaning that how do we want our state to be enhanced? How do we want to be the forefront as far as education, environment, the economy is concerned? How do we want to say that overall across the board, I feel good about the state? Yeah, there's problems here and there, but overall across the board, I feel good about the way the state is going. Yeah, there's going to be certain increases in certain areas, certain takeaways in certain areas, but as a general feeling, I like the way the state of Maryland is going. To me, a lot of people felt between 2003, 2007, when Governor Ehrlich was the governor, there were some things that he could have did better. Absolutely. But most people felt as though overall, I liked the way the state of Maryland was going.
And polling backs that up. Polling does back that up. He was a very popular governor, even though he lost.
Right.
I'm curious why either one of you backed the candidates you back.
Well, I don't back anybody.
You don't back anybody?
I don't back anybody.
But you were at the rally.
Yeah, I was at the rally for a different purpose. In fact, okay. I was at the rally, actually. And it's connected to the reason why I don't back anybody. I am an issue voter to the point where this election, one of my main issues is this $104 million youth jail that the O'Malley administration is moving forward on that will be next to a proposed facility for women, incarceration facility for women as well. That's my issue. And I was there at that rally to charge the governor to come out and disavow his connection to that project, to say he would move the money, $104 million, away from the incarceration of young people in Baltimore and move it toward capital projects and programs that will uplift our young people. My support, that is one of the major hinges on the door of my support for this election. And if O'Malley doesn't speak to it, I won't be voting for Mr. O'Malley.
I'm not going to ask you to vote. I was about to say that. That was none of my business if you're voting for it.
but if Bob Ehrlich were to say, Pastor, that he does support the eliminating this capital project, which is a juvenile jail and a women's facility in downtown Baltimore. Would you, in fact, give your support to Bob Early?
I would give him my ear. I would give him my ear. If he were to come out and say that and sign some type of social contract with the community to say, I'm going to move this money to uplift, then I will give my ear and it'd be time to talk. And I think that's what this, when I was talking earlier about the black community can really be excited when we're in this position of power to determine who's going to be the next governor, we can really delineate some of the issues and some of the things that we want done and say, listen, I don't care D or R, I don't care donkey or elephant, I care about these issues. And if you're favorable toward these issues, then we can talk and negotiate. And I think that's a different level of political maturity rather than just saying I vote Democratic because black folk have been voting Democratic for three generations and my grandmama did too. I'm saying, no, here are my issues. Here's what I see on Greenmount, on Monument, on Forest Street, the people I pastor and love and serve. And I want to see who's going to speak to those issues.
Go ahead, Trey. Then I'll...
I'm from Early because I like the way that he's going to plant the seeds for the growth of Maryland for the future. We might not see everything he's put into place right up front. It's not going to happen within a year or two. But his outlay for 2020 was really good measures as far as charter schools for Maryland, as far as restoration of the Bay, as far as being more friendly towards businesses to come in here, small and big businesses to come in the state of Maryland to prosper, for us to move away from just being a state of government jobs and biotech, that we can actually be a state of more measures than that. We can go into information technology. We can go into computers. We can do things that sort.
Elder, let me ask some questions here. Folks, I really want you to join us. We have one caller in, Hank. We're going to come to you in a minute. 410-319-8888. We want to get you all on the air. Who are you voting for and why? Who do you like and why? What are the questions you want answered in this race? Do you intend to vote in this race? Are you going to vote for a third-party candidate, a Libertarian candidate, a Green candidate? 410-319-8888. And what are the issues that move you? I mean, we've seen that, you know, I think it's correct what people are saying at this table, and I'll add another group of voters in there as well. I think the conservative voters in Maryland, mostly white male voters in the suburbs, take that back, that wasn't said correctly, the mostly white male conservative voters that live in the suburbs are motivated to come out for Bob Ehrlich in this election. Mm-hmm. There's a trend going on in America with that. However, the polls are showing Democrats could be winning across the country. On the other hand, progressives and liberals in Montgomery County and African-American voters in Baltimore City and Prince George's County are the key to Martin O'Malley's victory. And as one of those progressive leaders, liberal leaders, said to me today, just in an informal conversation, well, what has Martin O'Malley done to excite me to come out to vote? This wasn't a black voter. This was a white liberal voter. That is really part of the issue. And what are the differences really between the two men? What are the real key differences? Mm-hmm. Martin O'Malley raised the sales tax to 6%, and Ehrlich said he's going to drop it to 5%. Well, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean to anybody out there? I mean, it means we lose $600 to $800 million in the treasury for the state of Maryland. So what are you going to cut? I mean, so what is either man saying about what the future of this state is going to be? And how we're going to approach it, whether it's the future of our children, especially children who live in poverty, the environment. And I see another thing, Trey, you're talking about, let me just throw this to you, and then we'll go right to the phones because tons have called in now when I get them in the air, is what can a governor really do about the economy? Well, you can't raise – it's a national issue, not a state issue. And we play that political game of, you know, it's O'Malley's fault.
Right. It's a way like a manager can run a shoe store. A shoe store has its salesman and it has the shoes that it sells, but a manager can make sure that certain shipments are there so the shoes are actually there when customers come in. Certain sizes are there when the customers come in. He can ensure that he hires people who are sales associates who are friendly, who are affable and have a good rapport with customers. He can make it so that the people he worked for are taken care of and they're respected, and he can make sure that the customers that come into that store are taken care of, respective. He can't change the size of the store. He can't change the merchandise that's sold because it's a company, it's a national change. But he can manage that store well. I believe Governor Ehrlich can manage the state of Maryland well. I believe that when people from across that don't live, that are from New York and Pennsylvania and California, when they come to the state of Maryland, they're going to say, this is a state where I can feel comfortable anywhere in the state, whether it be Baltimore City or whether it be Potomac, Maryland, that my kids are going to have a proper education, that I'm going to be able to have I can send my kids to a school where the tuition rate will be reasonable, where it's going to be a proper education, where if I want to start a small business, that the government's going to be very helpful and not hindering me in those efforts, and it's going to be managed well. That's what I believe Bob Ehrlich's going to do, and he did do when he was governor.
Reverend Heber Brown?
Yeah, for me, I mean, when I look at, when you talk about the difference between the two and those type of things, I think those are very important questions. And once we get past the TV commercials and the radio spots and even the name calling and stuff, I mean, some of the stuff I see, it's almost reverts back to high school, you know, SGA. Well, you know, he's not my friend. I don't like him. And come on, get real. I mean, at the end of the day, that doesn't help anybody, Republican, Democratic, Libertarian, or whatever. But I do think that one of the things that we can at least begin to or continue to analyze as it relates to people really plugging into either candidate or whatever agenda is, I would be curious to really look at the low voter turnout and really drill down a little bit deeper there. Sometimes I think we so easily dismiss those who don't show up and say, you know what, they're irresponsible. They're, you know, people bled and died so we can have the right to push this button on this screen and all this kind of stuff. But what if there's a portion of those people who did not show up who have come to their reality or come to their conclusion understanding that neither one of these mainstream parties has the answer for the suffering of their lives and their community. And though the perception is given over television and radio that, you know, vote for me and I'll set you free, what if people are coming to the point where they say, you know what, neither one of y'all, I've lived under the Republican, and I was straining and struggling then, and now I've lived under a Democratic governor, and now I'm hurting as well. So what's the difference? What is the bread and butter difference between this one and this one?
Anthony, as someone who looks at politics and has been a partisan Democrat as well.
I have been, and I will tell you, Mark, what bottom line, Martin O'Malley and Anthony Brown are in enormous trouble. We have 5 weeks till this election, mm-hmm. and they have to find a way to energize, excite, and turn out voters. It's going to cost them a lot of money. Mark, in an election that we've known will be close, it's going to turn on very marginal issues. It's going to be one or two things that will excite, whether it's education, whether it's the prison downtown, whether it's jobs and unemployment. Martin O'Malley and Bob Ehrlich must begin in a very quick, swift way. Stop throwing names and fighting each other, and articulate a vision and a message that's going to generate energy. And I see both Ehrlich and O'Malley trying so hard to say something that's going to resonate. And once it resonates, they're going to be able to push that through for the next 5 weeks. But they haven't found their footing. And Mark, we're right on the cusp of this election. If Martin O'Malley does not turn out voters, and I, you know, the trend in this primary election, if you look at those numbers, and I know you and I love doing this, Republicans showed up in record numbers in the primary. And if they show up in the numbers that they are in, and they're motivated to show up now, if they show up just in the numbers for the primary, but we know they're even more motivated now that it's down to these two mainstream parties, they are going to win this election. And right now in the war room of Martin O'Malley and Anthony Brown, they are trying to figure out how can we, now we've ignored to the most part the issues that are resonating with voters. We've been so busy trying to deal with this federal issue, like you pointed out. And what governor in a state can really get their handle on how to fix even their state's economy? It's almost impossible. It's got to trickle down from the federal government. It's got to trickle down from the feds. And it's got to be a trend across the country. And Martin O'Malley, unfortunately, has been caught in a downward trend that he's been trying. I mean, I believe. Because, you know, it's not just because I'm a Democrat. It's because I watch and I study. I believe he has been doing the textbook things to generate excitement and energy in this state's economy. It just has not worked at the level that there's a perception that we're moving forward. I think he's in trouble.
One of the only states in America that is not having these economic woes, and I always get this backwards, I think it's North Dakota. Teeny state. But why?
Yeah.
You know why? They have a state bank.
That's right.
And all the money that they loan themselves and loan comes back through the bank. The interest comes back to the state. Mm. They invest that in schools. They invest it in roads. Mm. They have a state bank. That's nobody raises that issue very much.
Well, that's a scary issue for Democrats and Republicans.
We raised that issue on the show last week, broadcasting from Washington, D.C., with David Corton was our guest, who wrote about new ideas for a new economy, you know, and which I found fascinating. And that was one of the ideas that we had a show about that a few months ago, but he posited that on the air. Maybe we should ask both of our candidates those kind of questions. So we need to ask them questions that are like not center questions. Mm-hmm. What would you ask them? 410-319-8888. What would you ask them? Here with my pal and co-host and dear friend Anthony McCarthy, as well as our guest, Heber Brown, pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church right here in Baltimore, Trey Lewis, president of the Baltimore City Young Republicans, when he's not keeping the streets safe. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll go right to the phones and let's see. Hank, I did call your name, and to be very frank and honest, I'm going to go to somebody whose name I have not seen on the screen for a while first. Abdullah, I've not seen your name out there for a while. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope everyone is well.
Hi, Abdullah.
Very well. Peace.
Good. My background is sales, and I like the sales pitches that are being done. But my question more specifically, and without ambiguity, what miraculously can Ehrlich do now that he was not able to do or he couldn't do before?
That's a good question.
Everybody's
looking at Trace. This is the House Republican today.
I don't want to be the official Ehrlich spokesman. I'm just a regular voter. But one of some of the things that Ehrlich started and tried to initiate in his tenure as governor, I'm not going to say because he lost the election and didn't finish. It's just that, you know, they were starters. They were initiatives. The Thornton bill that tried to fund higher education in the state of Maryland, money that went to the Department of Transportation to get the ICC beltway system in Prince George's, Montgomery County, the Chesapeake Restoration Act, which was one of the most progressive environmental acts in the state of Maryland history and nationally recognized. Charter school initiative which turned around many troubled school programs in the city of Baltimore. These things were started. Unfortunately, he didn't get to finish. And just like with anything, when you're trying to govern a whole state, even though we are a tiny state, we have a lot of things going on here. We have a lot of departments. We have a lot of people to manage, and a lot of problems that we had that he incurred. Not playing a blame game, but a lot of problems he had to incur in order for him to do his innovative things, he had to fix those up first. So the things that Bob Ehrlich did with his first 4 years, he initiated and started many things that would have led the state in the right direction. Unfortunately, he just didn't finish them.
Well, Mark, I think that we have to, and Abdullah raises a very important question. What will be the defining factor? What will be the big difference for Martin O'Malley if we give him 4 more years or give Bob Ehrlich another chance to run government? Mark, I think that you hit on it before we started taking callers, and I know we want to get back to the callers. We have to ask Martin O'Malley and Bob Ehrlich what they really stand for. And we can't allow them to retreat to the middle, which is what Bob Ehrlich's going to do because he wants to pull those conservative Democrats over. And that's what Martin O'Malley needs to do because he wants to pull progressive Republicans over. And what we find are men who will talk to the center, who will not really answer a question, but will point out some statistics and some success stories during each of their terms. People want to know how you're going to fix education. They want to know how you're going to fix the dropout rate. They want to know how you're going to ensure that we don't continue to lose major businesses and employers to going to other states. They don't want the story about what you did in the past. They want to know what you're going to do now that they're hurting in the real time, right now. And I think too often when you listen to Martin O'Malley and you listen to Bob Ehrlich, we get a resume. We don't get solutions. And I think it frustrates voters. And I think that is why. I think many of them did send a message, not to Bob Ehrlich and Martin O'Malley in the election. I think many of them tried to send a message to the leaders here in Baltimore, leaders in Prince George's County, leaders in Baltimore County by staying home. They decided, you're not the answer to this problem. And too many of us jumped immediately. Well, whether the answer or not, you've got to exercise that right to vote. I think that we're going to see a lot of frustrated people take out their frustration on Martin O'Malley and Bob Ehrlich come November.
Let's go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Okay, Hank, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Hank.
Hey.
All right, bless you. first of all, a young man who brought up the analysis of this, good job, right? This is my thing. I don't see O'Malley doing anything for us, right? And if I was to ask him a question, both of them a question, I would ask them this one question. How far to the right are you going to turn your screwdriver on me? Quarter turn, half turn, or full turn, right? Because either way, y'all going to turn the screwdriver to the right on me. I just want to know who's going to turn it the least amount. Because, like the guy said last week, the lesser between two evils, right? But I really don't want to vote for O'Malley because, one, he hasn't done anything for the Baltimore City, right? And what he has done is, like, pretty much just destroy almost everything that I know, right? He's building this jail. He's locking up people left and right when he first got in office, right? And I just don't think that that's fair for anybody, right? He's not up doing what he's supposed to do with the school system or anything. I'd rather vote for somebody green than to vote for O'Malley, and I'm a devout Democrat. Every other Democratic person on the list will get my vote, but O'Malley. Hmm. He's done nothing for us in this city. Nothing.
Now, let me ask you, folks, you think that's true, Anthony?
Well, I would say, you know, trying to be as objective as possible, Martin O'Malley has, with the resources that he's been given, tried to, you know, he has actually increased the funding for Baltimore City's public education system more than it's been increased in almost a decade. I think that he has, in fact, supported the initiation of charter schools, not only here in the city of Baltimore, but across the state. I think that he has dealt with an economy, Mark, that Maryland, for all the problems, and I talk to people who are unemployed every day. I talk to people who are in assistance every day. I talk to people who are in families, Mark, who are giving up their homes because they can't afford the mortgage anymore. And they run out of hope or help from the federal government in keeping that mortgage because everything is just so upside down. And Martin O'Malley has, I believe, tried to, like every Republican and Democratic governor across the state, steer this ship to some calm, steel waters. Unfortunately, it was such a huge task. I don't think he got us there. And I think too many people are hurting. Too many people are hurting not only in the suburbs, who I think will run to Bob Ehrlich and vote for him because they're mad and they're frustrated. Mark, in the city of Baltimore, like Pastor Brown mentioned, Greenmount Avenue, he talked about North Avenue, he talked about these. Mark, there are neighborhoods here who have no hope. And they believe, right or wrong, and I know the O'Malley people are going to hate when I say this. They believe, and I've heard them say it. I've heard them say it at City Hall. I've certainly heard it in the streets and churches of our city, that over the last 4 years, we did not see Martin O'Malley in the city of Baltimore. And now he, like the prodigal son, has come home. And we are supposed to, and it's worked in the past, not just with Martin O'Malley, but with every governor, Glendinning and others, that we're supposed to open our arms and we're supposed to turn out in droves to ensure a Democrat stays in the state house. I'm not sure if we've reached the tipping point, Mark, where that plan, that blueprint may not work this time.
And that's what, when I agree with you, you talk about what you hear in the streets as well. And if you listen to what Hank said, you know, it wasn't even about the last 4 years.
It was about the last 8 years.
It was when O'Malley was in Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. There is a taste in the mouth of everyday Baltimoreans about Martin O'Malley. And, you know, that taste, you know, irrespective of what happened the last 4 years. I mean, this is before the storm started, right? That's this is before the storm. There was a taste in the mouths of some that Martin O'Malley was not good for Baltimore City. And now that the storm has started, that's just more to pile on. And it's like, you know, like I said, on Saturday when I went to that to the rally for O'Malley and just to kind of scope out and try to get my question answered about the youth jail as a youth jail voter, I said, why am I driving all the way out to Bush Street? I'm driving all the way out here for an O'Malley get out the vote campaign with Baltimore City pastors. Why can't O'Malley go to Greenmount? Why can't he go to North Avenue?
Where was the rally?
It was at Bush Street out at the AFSCME building. But the Baltimore City pastors are not out. I mean, there's some out, but the heartbeat of black pastors in Baltimore City are not out of Bush Street. And what I was just thinking as I was driving, I said, why I got to drive all the way out here? You know, why is his headquarters in Canton somewhere? I mean, why not in Baltimore City? I think, as Anthony said, you know, there's a taste in the mouth of some that, you know, the prodigal son now wants to come home and gets the blessing. And I'm less convinced that people are going
to
show up.
We have to go to break, Tracy. Okay. You got 30 seconds. What it takes to break?
And yeah, but what I don't understand is that with Baltimore City voters, they voted him in. I've heard some people even say that the reason why they voted for him in 2006 is because they want him out of Baltimore City. So why would you want someone who ran your city wrong, run your entire state wrong? If people were that adamant, and I know what you're saying, Anthony, and I'm with you as far as we have to address the apathy of voters is not just them. But if you were that adamant and that irate about the actions of Martin O'Malley, why would you vote for him?
But
why wouldn't you not vote for someone else who you actually liked?
Because I think a majority of African-American voters in this community are not going to vote for a Republican who represents interests that are antithetical to theirs.
Very true.
That's part of the problem.
That's a very honest response.
Yeah. I think that's part of the problem. 410-319-8888. And when you look at the two conventions, 410-319-8888. Is the number here. We'll be right back to continue this conversation about the elections coming up. Stay with us. Charles in Northwest, we're going to go to you because of all the callers listed so far, I haven't heard from you in weeks, so you're next. We'll be right back. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. And before we come back to our discussion, I want to, as a call out to all of our listeners here, the WEAA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming fall membership drive, October 9th through October 17th. If you have just a few hours to volunteer, or any show you want, the Mark Steiner Show, the Anthony McCarthy Show, how about those two? Or any other WEA program, call our membership department at 443-885-2075, 443-885-2075. Great camaraderie. Answer the phones. Help your public radio station really grow and have good food and just hang out and meet everybody at the same time. So please join us for the drive. Right now, join us for this conversation. We have Anthony McCarthy and I have with us Trey Lewis, president of the Baltimore City Young Republicans, and Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore on Belvedere Avenue. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And I read to you this thing, and Charles is going to come to your call next and then get everybody in here. Brendan, Leo, Baba. There's an article that I found in Central Maryland, which is a great website to learn about Maryland politics. It has stuff from all over. And it's from the Capital, which is the Annapolis newspaper, and daily paper. And it's about the power is the lobbyists have staying power. And that whether it's Martin O'Malley or Robert Ehrlich, the next 4 years, the power is going to be with the lobbyists. Let me just read you this one quote from one of the most powerful lobbyists in Annapolis. Gerald Evans. He says, it takes a lot of time to develop a working knowledge of each and every member of the legislature and to have credit with them, said Gerard Evans, a longtime Maryland lobbyist. You can't just walk in off the street. It's very hard to go from kissee to the kisser, Evans said. It's a question of hard work. It's 90% process, 10% politics. So if you just can't walk in off the street and have the same influence as somebody who represents moneyed lobbyists, then where is the power of the people? Who do we listen to that we elect? Do we listen to the lobbyists, or do we listen to the few people who come out to vote for you? And unfortunately, in legislative elections, very few people vote for their state senators and state delegates. Right. So, I mean, this is part of the issue. That where is the power? I think many people maybe just see, they think where the power lives, and they go, well, what am I doing here? What role do I play?
Mark, I think that is very telling, and that is a very honest statement from Gerald Evans.
He's not a bad human being.
He's a wonderful person. I know him well. I watch him work his magic.
But
he is very clear that their interest, in the interest of their employers, their clients, is his top priority. Mm-hmm. And guess what, Mark? If Pastor Heber Brown calls his state senator, and I'm just being honest, and you know what affection I have for Pastor Brown. That call will not be returned as quickly as Gerald Evans' call. And it's not that they do not respect Pastor Brown, but they have a quick link, which is called a check, to Gerald Evans. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in politics, Mark, the state senators, the state delegates, the governor, the comptroller, they need that check. And in their mind, they're processing that. They need that check to stay in power so that they can continue to do the good that they want to do in the community. So Pastor Brown will be on the call list, but he will be called after Gerald Evans is called. Mm-hmm. That's where that was the most honest comment Gerald Evans could have made. Mm-hmm. That's where the power lies. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, if we took a bus of folks down from the 44th District, inner city of Baltimore, we may have success. But if we wrote a $4,000 check, we're guaranteed success.
I'm glad you brought that up too, Anthony, about me getting through to people. Can I tell you that the truth is, when I went to that Saturday event at AFSCME and with the pastors and everything, which I was invited to, RSVP'd and everything to be a part of that. But because I was raising the issue about the O'Malley's $104 million youth jail, I actually was asked to leave that event. Glenn Middleton and a couple of his assistants came and asked me to leave the event because I was not there just to cheer and wave a O'Malley flag and whatever else. And so that's just the pastor or no pastor, reverend or no reverend. I'm just giving you an example of what Anthony said. That would have never happened if I got a $5,000 check and put it in somebody's hand. That would never happen. There's only one state delegate, at least, that I know that I'm speaking to. For me personally, everybody's different experiences, but for me, Delegate Jill Carter is the one person. When I call her, I feel like I'm talking to a human being. To many others, when I talk to them, I feel like, you know, I'm getting this robotic response, or I get that form letter in the mail. And so, you know, shout out to Delegate Jill Carter. Hopefully I'll be somebody one day where other elected officials will listen to me, pastor or not. Just everyday, as 44th District, just everyday people should feel like they can reach out and be talking to a human being and not just somebody's going to give me a rote answer and say, okay, yeah, I'll see you next election.
Let me go back to the phones and come right to you, Trey. 410-319-8888. Charles in Northwest, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, Charles.
You know, if I wasn't a strong-minded person and a strong-willed person, I'd be absolutely depressed listening to you all.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Charles.
You know, it sounds like to me, I'm serious, man. It sounds
I know
like
you are.
Deliberately trying to demoralize a mostly black listening audience, hoping that they won't come out to vote. And you know, if you succeed in doing that, Bob Ehrlich will win.
So what do you think people on this panel should be doing instead?
You're extraordinarily negative and depressing. But let me say this.
No. What do you think we should be doing instead as well?
I think you should be talking about both their records, laying their records out. I think you should talk about, for example, Bob Ehrlich 4 years ago shipped busloads of people down from Delaware and I think Philadelphia. Homeless people, gave them $100 a piece, something like that, a bag lunch, and had them pass out fake ballots.
Okay, I remember
now
that.
Now you're being negative, though, Charles. I think that we have pointed out both of those records. We didn't talk about that issue. But, yeah, I think your characterization is just off. Go ahead. We're listening.
And, he did that, tried to pass himself off as a Democrat when he was trying to trick people 4 years ago. And this time around, he's got black talk show hosts, only our personalities. None of you, I don't think. Yeah. One of them, $32,000 upfront money to suppress the black vote. But the guy asking only one of the black radio shows. And Bob Evans already has a show on WBAL. he owns another show on WOLB and a host as well. And they're paying people on black radio to suppress the black vote. Look, let me tell you one thing. Real simple. When I go to the polls, I'm going to vote against the Republican Party and what they represent and Bob Ehrlich and what they represent and their philosophy and their ideology and their vision and where they want to take this country. I'm not caring about no bread butter issue that you all are talking about. People are going to vote philosophy. They're going to vote ideology. Between Bob, you're choosing Robert E. Lee or Ulysses Grant. And this is what's at stake in this election. It's that simple. The Tea Party is a referendum on this election, and you're going to vote up or down one way or the other. Forget all that other stuff.
All right, let's fuss with what you just said. Okay, and I hear what you're saying. And I think that what you're saying, Charles, and let's see if the panel talks about this, that there is, I think, Charles, I don't put words in your mouth, but an ideological war going on in America. And just like most unions, we'll have a number of union people on the next part of this program, most unions are backing even the most conservative Democrats in this country because they don't want to give control of Congress to either the Tea Partiers or the Karl Rovites to control the U.S. Congress and have Bonner be the Speaker of the House, where he will be a very right-wing and retrograde kind of figure.
Must have.
And so Charles has the point of view that if you don't vote O'Malley, then you're taking us backwards.
I have to disagree.
Trey Lewis.
Ideology wars and politics only go so far. They only go a certain amount of election cycles. The 2010 and 2012 is not really going to be about these ideological battles. It's just going to really be about pragmatic issues. I believe to a degree both candidates have really stayed away from these ideological battles, red versus blue, all this stuff like that. It's not important, Charles. What's important is that our state is in certain issues facing our state that need to be addressed. They're not detrimental to the entire health of the state. No, the state's not going to fall in the middle of the chest.
Let me ask this question, Jay. I mean, Jay, as a Republican, let me ask all three this question, and whether this makes a difference, Democrat or Republican, to you all, and then go back to the phones. Let's look at this thing like the Pledge to America that was just put out by the Republican Party.
Right.
Now, you say it's non-ideological, right? But maybe, you know, I don't even know what ideology means anymore sometimes.
Exactly. And that's true.
But you look at the Republican Pledge to America. I'll just throw it out here. And Republicans can jump on me and disagree, and you can disagree with me too, Trey. But it means tax cuts to billionaires. It means tax hikes for 110 million middle-class families in America. It means not having the oversight over big business and special interests with what they want to do. It means nothing to stop the outflow of jobs. I'm not sure that Obama's doing it either, but outflow of jobs from America's shores to overseas. And adding, as I think, trillions of dollars to the deficit. And I think that the idea of cutting back sales tax will add $600 million to our deficit in Maryland, because you're not going to find $600 million worth of cuts in the state budget without affecting people's lives, I think. I could be wrong, but I think that's the case. And so there is a difference, though. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Heber, when you say you don't care who wins, how about at that level? That I just – I mean, when you look at that kind of difference between which America it is, mm-hmm. and maybe that's the America you do want. But I'm saying I don't think that's the America you want.
I think one of the things that has happened to me personally, and maybe some others as well, as we've gone through the recession and – I got an email that it was over. Somebody tell my wallet, but
tell mine too.
But I think what has happened to me is that there has been a focusing on issues closer to home, closer to what I'm going through in my own personal family and my community. So when I read the Pledge to America, right, and I see things like I think one of the things is enforce sanctions in Iran. Do poor people care about this, really? Whose priority is this, really? I mean, am I going to go down to go to Appalachia and knock on doors and say, we want to enforce sanctions in Iran. Who's with me? I mean, who's really going to sign up to say, the bread and the butter issues? And for me, as you know, and Charles was, it might disagree, but $104 million for me is one of those issues. It's close to home, and it involves the allocation of resources of a community and giving a community the power to determine what happens with their own monies. And that, for me, is important. The people talk about giving people the power. I want the people to have the power to determine where the resources go in their own communities, and that not to come from the governor's house.
But the Pledge of America has to have elements of foreign policy and things that are bigger than just what goes on and
no
local
doubt.
Level.
But
so,
who said Iran was the priority?
Iran is a priority as far as our agenda, as far as keeping peace in certain parts of the world. That is something important to us. That's important to the United States. We're the number one power in the world, so that's an important issue. It's not. I don't think that's the hierarchy of issues, like you're saying. It's not even in the slightest. But it is an issue that has to be addressed. One of the things that in the Pledge of America I like the most is the constitutionality of new bills presented by Congress. I think that's very important. I think some of the things that we talk about, the tax cuts and things of that sort and the oversight, what's going to happen, I project, is that in 2010 elections, the Republicans will gain more House seats and gain certain seats in the Senate. And what that's going to happen is going to basically balance things out like it did in 94, where you're going to have a Democratic president and you're going to have a Republican-controlled Congress. And and they're going to, at first, they're probably going to bicker and argue still, but then the real issues are going to be addressed and map out, and we're going to have better days. That's what I firmly believe. I think that's what's going
to
happen.
Real quick before we go back to the phones, Mark, and very seldom I understand Trey's points usually, but when you look at this pledge for America, it is almost laughable to me. And maybe I'm just growing more cynical. What they did, Mark, was they chose points. Every priority point of President Barack Obama, they chose the Republican counterpoint to, and that is the pledge to America. Whether it's on economic issues, whether it's on foreign policy, as Trey pointed out, whether it's on Obamacare, whatever this ideological rift that we see in America, what the Republicans did was, and as a matter of fact, Mark, if we were to compare the contract for America or contract with America with this pledge for America, I would almost guarantee you different person in the White House, but almost the exact same pledge. And I think that it is a cynical, hateful, demonstrative way to take advantage of this ideological rift that we see, which is real. The Tea Party is here for a reason. And I think that what we see are Republicans playing on the fears and the absolute despair of the American people, hoping that people fall for this pledge and turn out. But not, what's going to happen, Mark? Republicans are going to not lose seats. They're going to gain seats. They're not going to gain control of either chamber. And the Democrats aren't going to have these massive losses. I think when Karl Rove and other conservatives, Sarah Palin and others, keep saying that, they expect the world to swallow that and believe that, almost speaking something into reality. If the Democrats are clear, if Barack Obama is clear in the next 5 weeks about where he's taking America, he can save this pathetic Democratic Party that we have. And they will stay, because I think a pathetic Democratic Party is better than a Republican Party at any given moment.
Remember in 2006 when the Democrats took over the House and they took over the Senate, mm-hmm. and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid got out there and they set this whole new pledge. They're going to do all these things, stuff like that. It was very ideological driven, but it went nowhere, even in a majority controlled Democrat Congress, because it went nowhere because the thing is the substance of it. And I agree with you. I agree with you. Certain things that's in this pack that the House Republicans just made, it's lacking true substance, because sometimes you just have to say, whether you be as far left or you're far conservative, and I'm neither. I'm center right. But the thing is that when you look at it, you have to have substance. And I'm talking about is that you have to be pragmatic in certain issues and to say, how do we deal with it? How do we address it? Put the ideologies aside, things of that sort. We're getting to the point now in this country where certain problems are coming ashore, and we cannot no longer just say we're going to go inside. We have to address them. And I think that stuff like this and stuff like what happened in 2006 are, you know, they're talking points. It's stuff to talk about on CNN talk shows. Eventually, it will have to become to a point where we're just going to have to address these problems regardless of who's in play and who's in power and who's in play.
Well, the only thing, and I know we're going to go back to the phones. We're going to hear from our callers. But we talked about Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. We talked about 2006. The reason that their agenda has not moved forward, the reason they haven't even worked better with this president, Mark, is there are enough Republicans in the Senate and in the House, and we have this ideological rift that has Democrats running scared to the right, that they can't get anything done. If people would really stand up, if Nancy Pelosi, who I think has been a horrible speaker, but if Nancy Pelosi were to stand up and say, this is the agenda for America, and they move those Democrats forward and tell those Southern Democrats who are terrified that if they do not run to the, not just the center, Mark, to the right, we have Democrats saying, I will not vote for Nancy Pelosi for speaker if you send me back to Congress. And if they would make them stand up and have the courage of their convictions, whether they win re-election or not, I think Democrats could get something done. But unfortunately, they have no courage, and they have very weak leaders in Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Do they have true substance? Do they really believe what they talk about, though? I mean, that's you got to look at that side, too. Do they really believe what they were talking about in 06? Do they really believe that for the country? Do they really want that country to happen? Do they really want the direction of America that they talked about in 06 and 08? Do they really want that?
410-319-8888 is the number here to join this conversation. We're going to go to folks we haven't heard from in a long time, so I apologize. People have been hanging on, don't get in. But I really want to hear from some new folks we have never heard from before. Let's see, Patrick and – I mean, no, he's not ready yet. Is he ready? Yes, no, yes, no, yeah, yes. Patrick in Severna Park, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi,
Patrick.
I take great umbrage with your guest. I know he's trying to present a legitimate view, but he made the comment, I guess about 20 minutes ago, that Bob Ehrlich was in favor of affordable education. If you look at his track record with the University of Maryland, he increased tuition 40%. His top advisor, Dick Hugg, who has great influence within the administration, put forth the proposal to double the tuition at Maryland in order to make it a more elite school. And he also has put out statements alluding to the fact that if he's elected, he will increase the tuition at Maryland, or at least decrease the amount of aid that the university gets from the state in order to balance the budget. In other words, he's going to make it much more difficult for middle-class families to educate their children. He tried to do it when he was in office, and he will definitely do it again, because Bob Ehrlich, for all of the good things that he's done in his life, and there are many, at the end of the day, he's a Republican, and he's in favor of making rich people richer, and they con the middle class constantly, but what they do is actually feather their own beds and make it much more difficult for the average guy. And when you double the tuition at the University of Maryland, you are not helping people, you are not helping the state of Maryland, and you are making it exceedingly difficult for this state to compete and making it very tough on the average person. And so his contention that Ehrlich is for affordable education is basically nonsense.
Well, Patrick, can I ask you something? This is Anthony McCarthy.
Yes.
I want to ask you, now, the regents of our university system have intimated that they need Martin O'Malley to end this freeze on tuition, that they need to increase dollars that are coming to the University of Maryland. Do you think Martin O'Malley should begin to raise the cost?
Sir, the reason that they want that is because Martin O'Malley, like, you know, everyone in this mm-hmm. day and age, is afraid to raise taxes to provide additional funds for education. The point is that the people of Maryland need to be giving more money in their taxes to the University of Maryland and other institutions that benefit all of us. Martin O'Malley should have raised taxes even more than he did for specific purposes, such as providing low-cost education. The reason the regents are proposing that is because they know it's very doubtful that there's going to be any more money coming in. The money has to come from somewhere. And I would submit to you, sir, that whether you're a liberal or a conservative, mm-hmm. having low-cost, affordable education at our public university is a positive thing. Most people don't want to pay a lot more in taxes, but I think most people would be willing to do it for a specific purpose. The University of Maryland was named number 8 in the country by the Wall Street Journal, of all places, in terms of its graduates and their efficacy. So how can we maximize this? It's not by doubling the tuition, and that's what Bob Ehrlich is all about. So those of you that have kids in University of Maryland, if you want to pay more, vote for Bob. You'll find out what happens.
Patrick, thank you. Let's try to get another call here before the top of the hour. Alan in West Baltimore, we've been holding on. Alan, you're on the air. Alan, you there?
Yeah, this is Aaron.
Turn your phone, your radio down, please.
Good. Pastor Brown, I'm glad you stood up at the AFSCME meeting. But, you know, one thing I'm getting a little perturbed with is the use of the Tea Party to silence legitimate voices of opposition in the Democratic Party and to silence those of us who have legitimate differences with Martin O'Malley by throwing out the boogeyman of the Tea Party. I'm so sick of that, I don't know what to do. Because they're legitimate folks who have legitimate opposition to Martin O'Malley, who have legitimate issues that need to be raised, and throwing the Tea Party out there doesn't help us to raise those issues that definitely need to be raised.
Well, Heba, you want to call your name out? You'd like to close out with a response?
Sure, but real quick. 2 minutes. I can see your point of view. I think it's a great thing to consider and explore, Aaron. And I think you're right. I mean, you won't find me at a Tea Party convention with a banner and a gun and whatever else. I'm not, you know, I'm raising points that are important to me and my community and those I serve, those I love, those who raised me. And it's just a legitimate point that I'm raising. And I think there are others who are raising that same thing as well, who will not run to pull the Republican lever, but at the same time have some very, you know, pointed questions of the Democratic candidates.
Straight 15 seconds.
For this call, I think the Tea Party issue is issues in certain states. I don't think it's so much as here. We don't have the base behind it. We don't have the political diversity in the state of Maryland where the Tea Party is really relevant in their views and agendas are.
And I think Tea Party is helping the Republican Party implode right now. That's going to hurt them on Election Day, I think.
I think.
Now, even looks like Barbara Boxer might win.
That's right.
And they don't know.
She's always in trouble up until Election Day, and then she always.
That's interesting.
It out. Mm-hmm. She's always
Harry Reid is in trouble.
Harry Reid's going to be reelected.
Tea Parties could win in Nevada. They could win in Alaska, but I don't think they will. They will not win in Delaware.
No. No, they're not going to win in Nevada either.
Hello, look out. Anthony's at a right here.
Angle's nuts, and she's not going to be elected.
We got to take a break here. I'll remind you first, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. I want to thank the Reverend Heber Brown and Trey Lewis for joining Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner here during this first hour. It's great to have you all here. When we come back, we'll be joined by folks from our unions and other places to talk about the One Nation March in Washington, and then venture into the world of stink bugs. Stay with us.